It's not just that Bob is brilliant. It also helps that everyone else isn't as smart. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're back with Primetime Sports for Monday, May 25th. This thing's going to fall off. It's Jeff Blair and Stephen Brennan.
Did you break that?
I don't know what it is. Anyhow, the microphone was wobbling. We have had that happen before, Mr. Brett.
Yes, indeed.
You're holding a bottle of water.
I am, yes. Or Primetime Sports water. Longworth Custom Water. Gail Longworth generously gives this, brings this in for us, and still has Damien Cox's picture on it.
How old is said water?
I don't know. I'm sure it's incredibly fresh. Tastes like water.
If it's got Cox's picture on it.
Yeah, no, the label may be old. The water's new. Okay, I'm sure we'll get, there'll be a new version of it with.
Because I worry about stuff like this, you understand. How you doing?
I'm good. Yes, I've had a little sabbatical. I've had a 2-week sabbatical.
Brent, you always have a little sabbatical.
No, it's not like I wasn't doing things, but I've had a sabbatical from here.
You're a filmmaker now.
I am a filmmaker now. Yeah,
the Russell Martin thing. Congratulations!
Thank you.
It was awesome. World citizen.
Nice piece.
Great.
Jeremy McElhaney produced that.
And, I would tell you though, that's awfully hard to butcher a Russ Martin.
Well, he's got. It was fun. You know, I thought we got some stuff in there that hasn't been seen before for sure. And his parents are awesome. Right?
They really are
two great characters. When I was doing it, I kept thinking about, you know, they were only together for a couple of years, but thinking about what they must have been like when they, you know, around the time they got together, they would have been a really interesting pair of people, a really interesting looking pair of people too, you know. She's an actress, you know, from your way in Manitoba, and, you know, he's an interesting guy who grew up, you know, played football and grew up on the South Shore and took up the saxophone at like age 25 or something.
Yeah. He's a very charming man.
Very charming.
When you do sit and talk to him.
Yeah, he's got a great open smile, and that kind of tells you what he's like. It's he's eccentric. I'll tell you that. He's not a linear guy.
Yes.
He is a non-linear guy. So it was an intriguing guy to try and interview. But you know Russ comes from interesting stock. There's no question about it.
What do you make of the local flannel as we get ready for this 3-game series against the Chicago White Sox after yesterday's win? It's weird because you look at the starting rotation, and since Todd Redman was parachuted in to give everybody a day off, it's been the best the starting rotation's been all year long.
Yeah, we're coming up on twice through, right?
Aaron Sanchez twice through has been pretty good. It'll be twice through tonight.
Burley twice through is good. Dickey twice through is very good.
And we'll see what Hutchison does.
You know what? I've been thinking about. I don't think I have a point of comparison for this season. You know, and I've been watching this team for a long time and covering it for a long time. It's very frustrating, and I understand why people are angry out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not quite an abandon all hope situation either. The division is a dog's breakfast, and it's not getting any better. Although I see the Yankees are winning by a couple of touchdowns today, but
scored 8 runs, I think, in the first inning.
But they, you know, they've got issues. It's hard to believe in Tampa, current front runners. It's hard to believe in the Red Sox, who were losing last I saw. Baltimore doesn't. I'm not sure they have the miracle run in them this year. So I'm not sure anybody's going to run away and hide. And it's not like, you know, you can sit there and play, have fun with figures and say, well, in order for the Jays to win 90 games now, they'd have to play 640 baseball for the rest of the season, which, you know, that's true. But there's all kinds of examples of teams that were 4.5. Well, the Jays were, what, 6 up at one point May, I believe. You know, and I don't think they won the division, as I recall.
No, they didn't come close to winning the division.
So stuff happens. It's an odd team. It has felt like the last little while that new things went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys playing the outfield who wouldn't be there in any other situation, misplaying routine fly balls, or bullpen breakdowns after a good start, or offensive short circuiting. At times when you got a good start, it's different ways of losing than they were losing early when starters are going 3 innings and that's going to kill your bullpen and you're going to have all the dominoes fall the wrong way. But it's not like it's not salvageable. It just, things have to fall in place. And I'm not saying that they will, and I'm not saying that they won't. I don't have a, And, you know, I think if you get steady starting pitching, you've always got a chance. Mm-hmm. And I think that this team, once it gets healthy, will continue to score a lot of runs. You know, right now, if I look at it, the biggest issue right now to me is Jose Bautista and what the heck is going on there and whether he will be, you know, both the two-way player that we've come to, you know, because if you get him in the outfield and his offense is where it is and he plays the kind of defense he plays in right field, then a whole bunch of other things fall into place here, right? A whole bunch of other things in terms of the lineup. It'd also be nice if they had Deonner Navarro back because that would also help.
He is a it's funny how nobody mentions his name when they talk about things that are missing from the team, but, I mean, you know how John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos think about how important, I mean, you know what they said in spring training about how important he was to this lineup, and he really was. I mean, he's an authoritative bat in the middle of the lineup.
Well, and he gives you options, right? We talk about the bottom end of the 6, 7, 8, 9 guys in this lineup. Well, you know, they've actually done incredibly well getting what they've got out of Colabello and even, you know, Ezekiel Carrera and Goins hits a home run yesterday. They, you know, but that's not going to continue. You know, those guys are what they are. So, you know, if Deonner, but do you, Jeff, have any sense of when Deonner Navarro is going to play again?
I've got no clue. I got no clue when he's going to play.
See, there's the stuff out in the mist there. Like, I don't understand how a guy with nothing structurally wrong with his shoulder could not have thrown a baseball for as long as Jose Bautista has not thrown a baseball.
There are a lot of people in uniform that have been asking that question, too. There are too many clouds around this team. There are too many clouds around. There's too many things that sort of don't pass the sniff test.
Well, that one doesn't, but I'm not sure who I'm suspicious of. You know what I mean? Like that. Yeah. Even with that one, I'm not sure. You know, there's two possibilities. One is there is nothing wrong with the shoulder, and for some reason, you know, Jose Bautista feels like there is, or he's in enough discomfort, or he was choosing not to play through something. Which, you know, and I'm never going to argue with an athlete in their own terms of their own body. Like, they should be the guys who make that judgment. But it's a strange one, and it's been a long haul.
It's had a pronounced negative effect on the team.
Yes.
I mean, it has. It's forced Edwin to play first base far too often. It's taken Justin Smoke out of the lineup, and Justin Smoke can do one thing. He's big, and he can catch the ball.
Well, you know, he can hit a little bit if you use him, as a left-handed bat, which they're, you know, not a lot of them on this team.
Yes.
But, you know, you saw him when he came in those pinch hitting situations that, you know, by and large, he didn't look, you know, he got a hit the other day, but he looks like a guy who hasn't played.
He forces the other manager to make a decision. I mean, his presence, and I don't mean presence as in aura, his presence on the lineup card forces the other manager to change the way he approaches the late innings of a game.
Yeah, it's true. And there's that, you know, and plus you wonder about residual impact of Edwin Encarnacion having to play first base all those games and what that does to you in August.
Yeah, well, that's I think, the biggest...
But you're right. There are a lot of clouds. Concern. If they win 5 in a row, a lot of the clouds would clear themselves up.
Well, and I think we'll see. I mean, I think the rubber meets the road when they go to Washington, or they've got interleague games coming up. Jose Bautista apparently is saying that he hopes to be back in the outfield in Washington because there is no DH. So I think that's when push comes to shove with this thing. But
he's either playing or he's on the DL at that point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We'll talk to Buck Martinez about that. He'll join us at 5:35. I want to shift focus a little bit. Interesting story this weekend. Now, if you've read my stuff on Sportsnet.ca or heard my show, you know that I'm one of these people who I really think that BMO Field deserves to be a soccer-specific facility. I've said this time and again. I think BMO Field deserves to be a national soccer stadium. And quite frankly, I don't know what that means for the Argonauts. And quite frankly, I don't care.
Now, you know, it was not built for that, though, right? It was built with public money, and
it was supposed to be multi-purpose, but you know what? How many years has Toronto FC basically had claim to that? And I also get to this point that, you know, I don't want to have a long debate about this, but I also think that it makes more sense in terms of a social thing to put money into soccer than it does to football, frankly, because
I would disagree with
years
you
down that. The road.
I'm a soccer guy, but I also think the Argos I'm not saying it's going to be a panacea for them. I'm not sure. I'm skeptical. I think, you know, the Varsity Stadium thing might have been that. But, you know, I this thing has been, you know, I'm still not quite sure. And if our buddy Dave Perkins was here, he would be quite happy to go through a chapter and verse about how MLSE ended up with control of a publicly funded stadium and determining these things. But, you know, I think in an ideal world, there would be a place for the Argonauts there because they, you know, just for, honestly, just for the sake of history.
Okay. Well, I just think that they've, you know, they've had, we're going to get into that. I think they've misplayed their hand time and time again. And the reason I wanted to branch off into that is on Saturday, TFC played a home match against the Portland Timbers. They won. A large section of TFC fans showed up dressed in black, and they're saying it wasn't a protest, it was a memorial. And essentially, a lot of TFC fans, a lot of the organized fan clubs, the organized fan groups around TFC are dead set against the Argos going to BMO because there's concern about what it'll do to the playing field. And, you know, now you get into there's going to be a hybrid system and it should work and it won't work. I mean, ultimately, we won't know until we've seen the Argos play a full season on that pitch and we've seen TFC play a full season in that pitch. I'm skeptical only because the pitch has been awful with just TFC on it. And I'm really skeptical about how this thing is going to hold up. Anyhow, Michael Przybylowski was part of the group that held the memorial service. And it was interesting for 23 minutes on Saturday. And if you've ever gone to a TFC game, you know about the drums, you know about the constant noise, you know about the jumping up and down, you know about the chanting. It was dead silent. And I wasn't at the game, but I was watching it on TV and I thought, I can't believe how quiet this is. Michael Przybylowski joins us on Primetime Sports. Michael, thanks a lot for doing this. Tell us a little bit about the background to this. I'm still going to call it a protest, just for my sake. But tell us a little bit about the background to this, what you hope to accomplish, and how concerned are you that now that Tim Lewicki is going to be leaving MLSE sooner as opposed to later, we're led to believe. I mean, Larry Tannenbaum, but regardless of who takes over, Larry Tannenbaum is going to be the power player in that particular situation. And I mean, as I said, he certainly sounds like a guy and sounded like a guy at the news conference who views this as a 50-50 co-share. He doesn't sound to me like a guy who thinks he's borrowing or a tenant at a stadium.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me on today. So, you know what? You call it a protest. We still think it was a funeral of sorts. And I think the 23 minutes of silence was kind of decided a little late just before the start of the game. And it was to show the front office, Tim, Larry, Bell, Rogers, look, this is what's going to happen down the road if our grass is ruined, if the lawn is ruined, because fans are going to stop showing up. Fans aren't going to be coming to the game. And you're going to have a dead atmosphere. And, you know, it's just trying to show them, look, if you continue on this road, this is what's going to happen. And, sorry, I missed your second question there.
Well, no. I was going to say, Michael, the team played there, might have played their best 23 minutes of the year then. You know, it's just a small irony, right? That they haven't looked, I'm not sure they've looked better than they did in the first half of that game. But there have been, you know, multiple reassurances delivered by Tim Lewicki and other people at MLSE that, you know, you can make this work, that they'll use some kind of hybrid turf that'll be more durable, that you won't see the lines, that there's a way to erase the lines between soccer matches and football, and that the two seasons don't overlap by that much, which that last part is actually true.
You think about it for a second. They're coming in 2016. They're going to have to put this renovation in place, which means the stadium, again, is going to be not opening until May. When you think about May till October, you got 19 TFC games, 10 Argo games, 21 weeks. That's not counting any friendlies TFC might be playing. That's not counting any International Champions Cup friendlies like you have with, I believe it's now Benfica versus PSG. That just got changed. Mm-hmm. And then that's also not counting any of the Canadian men's national team games. So we could be talking up to 34, 35 games being played at BMO Field in a 21-week stretch. I don't know how you can potentially say that the grass will be fine when you're playing that many times on it in the 21-week stretch.
And I, you know, Michael, I would also add in here that part of the issue I have here again is that Tim Lewicki, who by the way apparently got into it with the fan after during
halftime, actually
during halftime, right? And I want to talk to you about that. But part of the issue I have with this is, look, Tim Lewicki's a soccer guy, and Tim Lewicki, I think, is kind of, regardless of what I may think of him as a sports administrator, regardless of what people may think of him as a person, I think he is. I think he's been, in some ways, the best friend TFC fans have had. Well, he's absolutely gone, and you know as well as I do that the replacement isn't going to be a soccer guy. I mean, it's not going to be a soccer guy. And again, I keep going back to that news conference. And Steven, I'd like you to jump in, but you've got Tim Lewicki saying, you know, don't worry, soccer stadium, the Argos are tenants. You've got Larry Tannenbaum saying, well, this is co-share here. This is 50-50. Who's going to win between Tim Lewicki, who's gone in June?
Yeah, the absence of Tim Lewicki.
And Larry Tannenbaum, who's there. And I'll tell you what, I guarantee you, you're going to see the Argos want the field before the game. They're going to want it the day before the game.
Yep.
Well, they may. Other teams, you know, they do all kinds of stuff. They have their own practice facility. They may do a walkthrough. But, yeah, that's the kind of stuff you can actually farm out somewhere if you had to.
You know that they're gonna at least ask for it the day before the game. I mean, it's just so much easier for media, for media to go to BMO. I mean, it's gonna happen.
Yeah, but it's not like they practice the day before the game. It'll be a walkthrough. That's the least of your worries, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I do believe that this is basically going to become the Argonaut Stadium. And Michael, this is what I wanted to talk to you about. I think worst case scenario for TFC is that this thing does take off. Maybe the Argos do what the Montreal Alouettes did at McGill, and all of a sudden you're in a position where the Argos are actually outdrawing TFC because you have some discontented fans, some discontented TFC fans. Like, this is a real veritable Pandora's box that's been opened here, and I kind of see why soccer fans are concerned.
You know, I don't really see, even if they do take off, I don't see how they can be profitable at BMO Field when you consider, you know, they have to pretty much sell out the stadium every game just to get enough gate revenue. I don't know what their lease says, whether they will be allowed on the field the day before, but also what are they paying in rent? And then MLSC is going to be taking a cut on the concession stands, and that would be a big driver. I'm sure beer sales is a big driver for TFC, and if MLSC is smart and they have Rogers in there, and Rogers probably is the reason why this deal held up so long, they're probably in there looking, say, okay, how can we squeeze every single dollar out of this so we make more money? And if that's the case, then where's the money going to be for the Argos? I mean, you got to understand, the people that I stand with, a lot of them, there's a few of them that grew up as lifelong Argos fans. And a lot of us feel that the Argos would be better suited in their own stadium, where they have the ability to control their own schedule and have a better ability to control their own concession stands, which would be a big moneymaker for them.
Yeah, they're not going to ever get it, though. So that's kind of, you know, it's not even worth discussing. They're never going to have their own stadium. The one thing I wonder, Mike, you know, given what TFC supporters have put up with during the history of this team, this is the final straw? Like, you know, there are a whole bunch of other potential final straws, including the fact they've been crap, you know, for most of their existence. But, you know, I was there for one of the protests when they were holding up the big dollar signs in the, poor Tom Anselmi had to stand on the field and take all that crap. So, you know, people have endured a lot here. I just wonder, you know, given the loyalty and given the passion for what they're watching, that this would be the thing that would push them over the edge when all of those other things and all of those other terrible teams didn't push anybody over the edge.
Well, you look at the, you mentioned the dollar signs. You look at all the fan bases in Toronto. The reaction from that dollar sign was, we ended up getting lower season ticket prices. There's no other fan base here in Toronto that successfully protested anything that large. And the reaction that we got was, you know, they listened to us. They sat down and they said, okay, you know what? You guys are making sense. We haven't been coming through with you guys with the playoffs, and we're going to react to what you're saying. And I think there's definitely an opportunity here for MLSC to come and sit down with the supporters. I'm sure they will, and they will talk to us, and they'll find some way of compromising. To your point about, you know, Tim Lewicki's promises, I was just actually, funny enough, in reaction to what the supporters said, I think, you know what, that was just a reaction, because a lot of people feel very strongly about Tim Lewicki. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have a lot of respect for him. And you know what? A lot of people are upset that he's leaving early. He had this grand vision, and he's walking out before he's completed that vision. And, you know, today I was reading a blog on CBS Sports about how he had this vision for Kansas City, the stadium there, and how the stadium was going to be a major tenant. It's going to get an NHL team or an NBA team. And here we are, I think, 8 years later, and they get 100 concerts a year. 100 concerts is great, but the people, when they voted on whether to spend public money on it, it was voted because it was going to bring a professional team. So, you know, if you want to look at Tim's track record, potentially, I mean, that could be a cause for concern about the grass in the future.
Listen, Michael, we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much. I'm going to give you my best wishes, and I think we're probably on the same side of this. But thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. You guys have a great day.
You too. That's Michael Przybylowski. He is a member of TFC supporter group. And it is a story. We're not going to come to an end.
Well, they're going to have to learn to coexist. Yeah, that's exactly. Essentially the deal.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to work, but that could just be my skepticism. Alan Walsh of Octagon Sports Management joins us. Now, Alan is a hockey agent. We've talked to Alan an awful lot. But Alan also, as a lawyer, went through the whole Wells report and came to some interesting conclusions, I think. And I certainly don't have a legal background, but it's interesting. I think in some ways, Alan's conclusion sort of mirrors what a lot of us thought. And Alan Walsh from Octagon Sports Management joins us on Primetime Sports. Alan, you went through the whole Wells report, and you basically, well, you're having a difficult time finding a reason for Tom Brady to be suspended, aren't you?
Well, first of all, how you doing, guys? It's great to be on with you. I went through the Wells report, and I also went through the very detailed and well-put-together response to the Wells report prepared by the Patriots Council. And basically, there's not a shred of evidence that Tom Brady knew that balls were being deflated, if they were in fact deflated. Evidence or purported evidence was selectively used by Wells, and I can summarize it in a nutshell for those that didn't read the report. There were two gauges that were used, two separate gauges used to measure the PSIs of the football. The NFL had been tipped off that there was a possibility that balls were being underinflated before the game, and took some measures, including testing the balls before the game and at halftime. One of the gauges came out with numbers that had three of the four balls used by the Colts in the game actually underinflated as well, and those results are found in a obscure footnote. The other gauge, which is the one that they used in the report, in the body of the report, to justify evidence that the balls were in fact underinflated, was the ones front and center, and they never explained why one gauge was results were used over another at any time. They selectively picked out evidence and statements that would justify what I believe was a foregone conclusion before issuing the report.
Alan, when you say that, and I understand what you're saying here, but are you saying that, you know, that you could defend Tom Brady, you know, on those grounds, or are you saying you don't believe, having read everything that's in the report, that he did it? Which are two different things.
It is two different things, and you know, the honest answer is I don't really know. But as a lawyer, with a lawyer's eye towards the report, in reviewing the report, I'm telling you right now, you can write it down on a piece of paper, put it away, and look at it in a few months. When that suspension to Brady goes on appeal, and it's probably going to be heard by Roger Goodell as arbitrator and witness, which I'm going to be very interested to see that one, and then ultimately gets appealed to federal district court, most likely in Minnesota, where most of the appeals on suspensions end up. There is no way a federal district court is going to uphold the suspension based on the flimsy evidence in that report. That's what I can tell you.
Hmm. Talk about when, you know, the court's role in this, because, you know, you have a collectively bargained system and a collectively bargained system of punishments, you know, and in terms of Goodell's authority and his, you know, ability to be the appeal judge on his own case, essentially. At what point does the court have authority here?
Well, the court has authority to hear an appeal once all appeals within the CBA have been exhausted. So the CBA does say that any appeal from a suspension goes to the commissioner, and the commissioner has the right to hear the appeal or to designate someone else to hear the appeal that he designates. And then once a decision is rendered on the commissioner's appeal, it can then go to federal district court on abuse of discretion issues, abuse of process issues, and actually have a de novo review of the evidence justifying the suspension.
In conversation with Alan Walsh on Primetime Sports, Alan Walsh, of course, of Octagon Sports Management. Alan, one other item that caught our attention late last week, on the weekend, in Chicago, Gary Bettman talking during the playoffs, saying that he sees no evidence linking concussions and CTE. He made this comment, and his quote was exactly, "The fact of the matter is, from a medical and science standpoint, there is no evidence yet that one necessarily leads to the other. I know there are a lot of theories, but if you ask the people who study it, they tell you there is no statistical correlation where they can definitively make that conclusion." Now, you're a player, which I know you also have some strong views on this. Needless to say, the Chicago Tribune, amongst other publications, responded rather stridently. Gary Bettman's been kind of, I wouldn't say he's been quiet about this, but this seems to be kind of an odd time and an odd way to make your case, is it not?
It's interesting what you say, because there's two separate quotes out there, and the one that I verified with some people who were listening in the press box to Bettman before the game, the actual quote was this: "From a medical and scientific standpoint, there is no evidence yet that one necessarily leads to the other."
Right.
So Bettman is saying there's no evidence yet that concussions necessarily lead to CTE.
Okay.
And you know, using some lawyer speak, mm-hmm. Bettman is a lawyer. Technically, he's correct. There is no conclusive evidence to this day that if you smoke, you will get cancer. There is a huge body of conclusive evidence that if you are a smoker, you have a much greater likelihood than a non-smoker to get cancer. So what Bettman said, if you get a concussion, you are necessarily going to get CTE. That's not what anybody has claimed.
Mm-hmm.
So Bettman is standing up there saying this, and he very carefully chose every single word in his quote.
Hmm.
Now, what there is today is fairly conclusive evidence that repetitive blows to the head and concussions do lead to CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is basically a progressive degenerative disease of the brain. And that basically means your brain, as you get older, and not necessarily as you get older, it could be even in your 20s and 30s, starts to dissolve. That's what basically starts to happen. And it's not concussions, and Bettman only used the word concussions, but it's the repetitive blows to the head, what doctors call subconcussive hits to the head, of a repetitive nature, that over the years, the accumulation of that is what leads to CTE. I would like to see Bettman stand up there and deny that.
You know, but Alan, I'm with you there. But when I read this, the quotes, and I wasn't in the press box to hear him say it, but it didn't. No commissioner in a sport where head contact and concussions are an issue is going to connect the dots in any way. You know, Gary Bettman's not going to help anyone connect the dots between concussions and CTE and Steve Montador being dead. Right. That's because, you know, that opens up an entire Pandora's box that the National Football League and the National Hockey League and anybody else who's in the brain injury where, you know, in a business where brain injuries are part of the collateral damage is not going to go there or help anybody to go there because of the, you know, the potential consequences. And I know the NFL settled their suit and essentially won their suit with the players. But is there any difference listening to Gary Bettman, you know, again, with those kind of weasel word qualifiers in there, is that any different than listening to Roger Goodell or anybody else who's in that business?
Well, I think that Roger Goodell has moved away in the short term from making those statements because he knows they will be met with universal scorn throughout the sports world. He did make those statements a few years ago. He made those statements pre-settlement. He has shied away from commenting directly on the issue. What Bettman set up in the press box before game three, I think even Roger Goodell is beyond that right now. And I am shocked that in Chicago with Daniel Carcillo, a member of Chicago, with Steve Montador having played several years in Chicago, that he would choose that venue to make that statement. Really, it's twofold. It's defiant, it's ignorant, and he's certainly sticking a finger in several people's eyes. And I think it was intentional.
Alan Walsh, thoughtful as always. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
It's Alan Walsh of Octagon Sports Management. Not sparing any
words. Yeah, it's you know, and again, I know what he's saying, and he's right.
Yes.
You know, he's right about that. But you will never have a commissioner in a sport or anybody who's in charge in a sport where athletes are brain damaged who is going to acknowledge it is, as I say, is going to connect what is now a pretty strong dotted line. You know, because, you know, this case, because, you know, when you're talking about, especially when you're talking about players' deaths, you know, premature deaths.
Sure. I think the most you can hope for, the most you expect, though, is that maybe, and this is, I mean, we hate this, but silence.
Well, I think there's all kinds of ways you could have qualified that answer rather than kind of playing, you know, Bill Clinton English here.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you could have done it, which would not have led to this discussion. But, you know, and setting the bar as the Roger Goodell bar, setting it pretty low.
Yes, indeed it is. The Blue Jays and the Chicago White Sox will start a three-game series tonight, first of three games at the Rogers Center. Buck Martinez, the TV voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, will join us. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. She's my terrifier. Cool drink of water, such a sweet surprise.
Tastes so good, make a grown man cry. Sweet terrifier. All right, we're back with Primetime Sports. Bob Ryan and Teddy Atlas will join us in the next hour. Pretty significant day in boxing history, Mr. Brown.
Yep, 50 years, the Phantom Punch.
Indeed. Hence the Teddy Atlas of ESPN, one of our favorites, will be along at 6:35.
Yeah, they just packed in Friday Night Fights. The last of ESPN Friday Night Fights was Friday, and 17 years, I think. There's a really good run. Teddy had a great run there.
Yeah, Teddy's, I've told the story about sitting next to him in that fight in Montreal, sitting right behind, I should say, in that fight in Montreal with Davey Hilton and...
Stéphane Ouellette? Yes.
No, not Stéphane Ouellette, the other guy. The guy who was a real folk hero. Davey Hilton dismantled them anyhow. Mm-hmm. But it was fun getting to meet Teddy Atlas, and he'll join us later on in the show. But as I mentioned, we will have baseball tonight on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet. The Toronto Blue Jays starting a three-game series against the Chicago White Sox. Buck Martinez is our Blue Jays TV voice on Sportsnet. And Buck Martinez joins us from the Rogers Center. Buck, thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for joining Steven and myself. I guess not getting Carlos Rodon is a bit of a break for the Blue Jays. They get a guy that has had some difficulty against them in the past.
Yeah, Ben Hector Nowesi has had some problems. He beat them last August, but Marcus Stroman gave up five in the first in Chicago, and Nowesi pitched five innings and gave up five runs with eight hits. But they have hit him well, and, you know, they don't know Rodon, so, you know, that'll probably be a good thing that he will not pitch until Wednesday or Thursday in Baltimore. So, yeah, it's good to get him out of the picture.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Steven. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Buck, Jeff and I were talking at the beginning of the show here about, you know, the Jose Bautista injury and the domino effect that's had on this team and the roster and the problems it's caused way beyond not having Jose Bautista play in the field. There's just a lot of things that fall out from that. And the mystery of it. You know, now he's now had a cortisone shot. I guess we're going to wait to see how he reacts to that. But what do you make of this, Buck? A guy who, where they've said, they told us there's no structural damage to his shoulder, presumably have done all the requisite tests, and yet he has shut himself down for a long time now, and not, you know, still not a real clear timetable necessarily when he's going to play. Have you ever seen anything quite like this before?
No, I haven't. You know, generally, if somebody can't play like that for that long a period, you disable them, and then you move on from there. But, you know, when you look back, he hasn't played in the outfield since the 21st of April. And he missed five games before he got back into the DH. But, you know, this has been an ongoing thing with this whole team. You know, Bautista's been out since April. Then you lost Reyes. Then you lost Devin Travis. And Navarro has been out for quite a while now. So, yeah, it's you're just not getting your team back. But, yeah, this is unusual. And, you know, I don't think anybody expected to go this long. I think that's the big thing. If there was no structural damage, I think you would think, well, it'll quiet down and it'll be, you know, a matter of days and certainly not weeks, but an opportunity to get him back in the lineup. So it has been kind of curious, but obviously the training staff and the manager and coaches have, you know, done the best they can to try to figure out what's going to get him back on the field.
Buck, you know, you've been in the position as a manager, and you've probably, as a player, had to exercise some influence as well. But, and again, as Brent said earlier, I'm not going to sit here and second-guess how an athlete feels about his own body. But, Buck, is there anybody in that team, is there anybody in that organization that needs to or needed to go to Jose Bautista and say, look, we understand your shoulder's sore. There's nothing structural. We need you in the outfield. You are a bit, even at 40%, we can handle that. We can have whoever, Devin Travis, Ryan Goins. I mean, we wouldn't be the first team to have a sore armed outfielder to have to compensate for. Should somebody have gone to Jose Bautista and kind of pushed that case?
You know what? Yeah, I guess, but not being in the locker room, not being in the clubhouse, and, you know, not being really close to these guys, I'm the only guy that I would imagine would have that kind of clout. You know, Jose is the man on this team, and the only guy I think that could probably approach that subject would be Encarnacion. He has, you know, he has the experience, he has the success, he's, you know, he's an impact player in his own right. But, you know, I'm sure John Gibbons has addressed this with Jose, and, you know, but he just hasn't been able to throw. So, you know, the easy remedy now, in retrospect, it's 100% clear. He probably should have been disabled until he got better. Hmm. Because, you know what, no matter how insignificant the injury might be as far as hitting, it probably doesn't help it in its process of trying to get it healed that he's playing.
Does anybody have a clue when Navarro's going to come back?
I haven't heard a thing about that. Other than, you know, I think he had a setback in his hamstring, but, you know, that's an awful long time as well. You know, just looking when Navarro last played, I believe it was on the 21st as well. I think that was in the same series. That's the last time he was in the DH role. And, you know, he's been absent for quite a while as well.
In conversation with Buck Martinez on Primetime Sports. Buck, the starting rotation, the much maligned starting rotation, well, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's found its sea legs and all's good, but certainly
This has been the best turn through the rotation we have seen this year, 1 through 5. Is that simply a product of that extra day's rest, or is there something else maybe we're missing that explains this?
I think you have to go back and look at that. You know, that Monday start by Todd Redman on Victoria Day allowed everybody to take an extra day's rest, and then Sanchez comes out and goes 7 1/3. Hutchinson goes 6 2/3. Dickey goes 9. Estrada goes 7. Burley goes 7 1/3, and Sanchez 6 1/3. They all pitch into the 7th. So there is something to that, and that's how you're going to get this thing turned around, by your starting pitching. They're going to have to be able to put up enough zeros to let the offense score a few runs. You know, and that has been the baffling thing. This is the most potent offense in baseball, yet they're 2-22 when they don't score more than 4 runs. So, you know, they have to get it together, and they have to pitch and hit on the same nights, and you know, hopefully this starting staff has clicked and turned the corner a bit.
What have you seen from Sanchez in those last two starts? I know, like, fastball command is easy enough to say, but if it was easy enough to do for a young pitcher, everybody'd do it, right? Has he figured something out mechanically, do you think, in his last two starts?
No. I think he's just recognizing that he can face big league hitters 3 and 4 times in a game and throw his fastball over the heart of the plate and trust it to get outs. I think that's what he's learned. I think early on he was trying to be too fine with it. He was defensive with it. And, you know, they have made some adjustments with his, not his mechanics, but, you know, there may have been the fact that he was tipping some pitches, and they've kind of cleaned that up a little bit too. So I think you're only going to see better and better Sanchez from here on out, because he is really gaining his confidence now. And once he gets to the point where he can throw strike one and then throw that changeup at about 85 miles an hour, not the 89 and 90, I think that's when he's really going to take off.
Buck, listen, we appreciate you joining us today. Rest those pipes. Should be an interesting game tonight, and should be an interesting series.
All right, good to be with you guys. You have a good night.
You too. That is Buck Martinez. He is the TV voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet. Again, the first game of a 3-game series tonight between the Chicago White Sox and the Blue Jays. And Jose Bautista, a mystery. Continues to be a mystery.
Well, and as, you know, Buck said, he is the big dog on that team.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that he said there's one guy who could go up and talk
Eddie.
To him. Yeah, he didn't mention the manager, actually. He said it was a teammate. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's significant as well. You know, I think there's probably a lot of guys in that room who are very intimidated by Jose Bautista.
Yeah. And, you know, people are going to sit there and say, you guys are, you're playing around the edges here, and essentially that we're suggesting that Jose Bautista is dogging it. And that's not the case at all.
I don't know what he's doing.
That was my next point. I'm not going to sit here and say that a guy's dogging it, but I'm going to tell you that I don't know if I've been around a situation before or in a long time, Steve, where I don't know what's what. I don't have a read on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to think that I can kind of figure out, and you go, okay, yeah, you can read between the lines here. You know what? You can't read between the lines here.
I agree.
And I haven't had to deal with a situation like
that. No, that's why I said to Buck, I said, have you ever seen anything like this? He said, no, I haven't seen anything quite like this either. But I know, and until this gets remedied, it's going to be awfully tough filling out that lineup card.
Yeah. The best you can hope for is that the other teams in the American League East just continue to
stink. So far, they're holding up their
like
end so far.
Yeah, it really is. And I keep telling people, you know what? If you're chasing the Yankees or chasing Tampa Bay, I'll take my chances. And the only team I think in this division that could go in a spurt and put people away is Boston, and that's just because of their lineup. That's what I thought. I don't know if I think that anymore. Speaking of Boston, Bob Ryan from the Boston Globe joins us. Then Teddy Atlas. 50 years ago today, the most iconic sports picture of all time was taken, the Phantom Punch. What are some of the iconic sports pictures of all time? We'll talk to Bob Ryan about that. Probably do a little hoops as well. It's Primetime Sports.